I recently gave a class in Princeton University about the intricacies of a Jewish neshama, and part of the class had me talking about suicide. And after I pointed out that suicide is up 37% since the year 2000, I asked the following four very enlightening and slightly counterintuitive questions about the statistics of suicide. I turned to the class and I asked them, which age group do you think suffers from suicide the most? Is it kids, teenagers, 30-year-olds, 70-year-olds, 90-year-olds? Which group, statistically, has the most suicides? So they looked at me and basically all said, of course, it must be teenagers or people in their low 20s. You know, people who have to deal with school and friends and hormones, who have zero financial freedom, they suffer the most. So I looked at them and said, incorrect. According to the Center for Disease Control, the age group that commits suicide the most are people between the ages of 55 and 65. The question is, why is that? Wouldn't you think retired people have the calmest, most tranquil life? Then I asked them which ethnicity or group of people commit suicide the most, and their knee-jerk reaction was, well, of course, it's poor people or immigrants, you know, the janitors, the dishwashers, the people stressed about life and making money. I said, completely wrong. Compared to the 4,900 Hispanic suicides that took place last year, and the 1,379 Asian suicides, and the 3,692 African-American suicides, upper-class, wealthy white people had 36,681 suicides. Wealthier white Americans commit suicide close to 800% more frequently than any other ethnic group. Why is that? Wouldn't you think the group that has the most financial stability, the group that has the easiest time navigating this country, should commit suicide the least? Then I asked them, which states in America would you say commit suicide the most? And they immediately blurted out, oh, it's obviously New York and New Jersey and California and Massachusetts and Illinois. And I said, again, completely wrong. The state with the highest rate of suicide is Wyoming, with 32.3 suicides for every 100,000 people. And then came Montana, Alaska, New Mexico, South Dakota, and Colorado. The three states with the lowest suicide in the entire United States, believe it or not, were New Jersey, New York, and California. Huh? How do you explain that? Shouldn't the states with the most pressure and the most craziness and Wall Street and Broadway and big, busy, stressful businesses have the most suicide? And finally, I asked them, which month of the year would you say people commit suicide the most in? And immediately they said, okay, this one we got. It's for sure December or November. Cold months, you know, people cooped up inside, people with no outlet, no sunshine, just rain and snow. I told them wrong yet again. The month that people commit suicide the most is the month of August. Why in the world is that? Isn't that so counterintuitive? Shouldn't the month with the most sunshine and the most vacation and the most time off be precisely the month with the least suicide? The answer to these questions is fairly simple. Inside each and every one of us is a neshama, a soul that is starving for meaning, and it is forever asking us for something real. But the soul can be suppressed, it can be distracted, it can be shoved to the bottom of our heart. The soul needs a certain degree of mental and emotional space to insert itself into the tangible conscious of man. People who are still figuring things out financially, or teenagers still trying to navigate life, or immigrants who every single day need to go out and work just to survive, or people who live in cities that are forever fast-paced and distracted, and people in the middle of the winter busy with their jobs or their semester or staying warm, have no mental space to give the soul. There's no room in the schedule for soul searching. But when one retires, or when someone is no longer under financial stress, or when you live in a place like Wyoming where life is very slow, or when you're on vacation in the middle of August, suddenly there's room for the soul to ask the million-dollar question. Why in the world do I wake up in the morning? Why have I not been fed in 40 years? And to some people, that question is too powerful to handle. Americans spend over $630 million on golf balls every year because people who aren't busy are desperately looking for something to do, to run away from the nagging soul that is asking and begging and pleading to be fed. The Jews in the desert were tempted to do the same thing. The Yidden could have looked at Moshe, who just instructed them to build the Mishkan, and say, listen, we're going to the land of Eretz Yisrael in a few days, and in a few days we're going to build the Beis HaMikdash. Let's just throw some poles together, we'll have a little tarp on top, and that will be our Mishkan for now, while we're busy moving into Eretz Yisrael. And then, after a few days, when we settle in and make a mikvah campaign and figure out where we're sending our kids to daycare, then we'll build the Beis HaMikdash, and we can build it with all the gold and silver you want. Right now, we're busy. We're worried about which plot of land we're going to get, and which neighbors we're going to live next to, and if we're going to live in Tveria or Be'er Sheva. The Jews could have acted this way, but they didn't. They looked at the Mishkan as an immense opportunity to nourish their soul, even if it was only originally transient and meant to last only for a few weeks. It was the ultimate relationship with Hashem. I don't care how fleeting and fugacious it will be. I don't care how short it was supposed to last. We aren't throwing together some poles and a tarp. We are doing it with gold and silver because the Yidden in the Midbar realized that every moment in life is a moment rich in potential for spiritual greatness. To push off feeding the soul would be wasting precious moments in life. To push off feeding the soul in exchange of being busy now is only pushing off the inevitable confrontation with one's neshama, which always, almost never ends well. These Jews realize that life is about the soul, not the body, and for the soul, every second counts. So you better believe they poured out their heart and soul into the Mishkan. They didn't care how short it was supposed to last. Points out Rabbi Yaakov Lyons that much like how at our children's chasanas, we don't just put out some sponge cake and some herring and a few roses and call it a day. We spend thousands of dollars on mounds of food and intricate bouquets of flowers and fancy lighting, despite the fact that the whole thing only lasts 3 hours. Because any good parent knows that those aren't any old 3 hours. They are the magical start to your kid's life. So to every stage in life, one can say that it's just a small stage. I'm just in 8th grade, it's only a year, whatever. 12th grade, it's only a year, whatever. Learning about Spanish, it's only a few years. Elzman is just a month. Shana Rishayna is just a year. The summer is just a few weeks. Why bother setting up chavrusas? Sfira is almost over. Why bother learning about it? Pesach is almost over. Why open up a sefer that gives meaning to it? This attitude is a titanic mistake. Because life is short. If we don't hop around now, we may never. And before we know it, we're in our old age kicking ourselves for not doing more with our spiritual lives while we still could. Sometimes we await a time in our life where we'll find calm and we tell ourselves, I'll start being more spiritual then, when I get older, when I retire, when the kids are out of the house, when I don't have to cook so much for Shabbos, when life is slower. Besides for losing out the decades leading up to those years, sadly, sometimes those years never actually come. Can you imagine if the Yidden wouldn't have taken the Mishkan seriously, relying on the fact that they would build the Beis HaMikdash in a few weeks? Well, those weeks turned to months, which turned to years, which turned to decades, which turned into centuries. They would have had to wait 480 years, all while relying on a Mishkan made of some poles and a tarp. Sometimes we rely so heavily on life calming down for us, but it never does. Better to learn the art of injecting ruchnius in the here and now. Better to master the ability to hear your soul's plea for something meaningful now. Now on a Thursday in March. Now in the middle of the winter. Now when the kids are screaming. Now when you have 3 million other things you'd rather be doing. Now, because later might not be what you think it is. Not long ago, there was a boat in the Pacific Ocean that, due to an engine which blew up, it sank into the shark-infested waters of the mid-Pacific, and out of everyone on the boat, there was only one survivor. One man managed to grab a piece of wood and hold on for dear life as he floated in the middle of the ocean. Scorching hot and dying of thirst, this guy drifted in and out of consciousness until he saw the blurry outline of an island in front of him, and he washed up to this island and was seen by a native of that island who ran over to hear the man croak out that he needs water desperately, and the natives gave him some water and he immediately passed out. And he woke up hours later to find that his body was all patched up from the wounds and cuts that he got while battling the sinking ship in the salty water. And he sees that his torn clothes were removed from him and were drying on the side. And he was wearing royal robes of silk. And he looked down and he saw that he was sitting on a throne. And he looks to his left and he sees that there's a servant standing right next to him. And he asks the servant, "What happened to me? I don't remember anything." And the native responded that, "You are our king, and your wish is our command." So the guy says, wow. And he tests it out. He asks for some bread and butter. And right away, three natives ran off fetching him some warm bread. And then he asks for some meat and a salad. And they speed off to fulfill his command. And he spends the whole rest of the day enjoying his newfound kingship. After a few weeks of this, he pulls over his personal servant and he asks him, okay, what in the world is going on? So the servant says, I'm not really supposed to tell you, but no one has ever asked me this, so I guess I can say, on this island, the ocean is our god, and we have a custom that any person who is sent by the ocean to our island is a sign from our god that he must rule over us. He will be our king. But we believe that it's only for 12 months. At the end of the 12 months, we will remove your royal clothes and we're going to replace them with your tattered and torn clothes that you came with. And we will beat you up to give you the exact same scars and scrapes that you had when you arrived here. And we will send you off again into the ocean with the same plank of wood that you came with. So the guy looks at him. What are you, nuts? I'm going to die out there. And the servant just looks at him and says, yeah, you'll probably die. But listen, that's our tradition. So he looks nervously at the servant. He says, okay, so what should I do? Well, if you want my honest advice, I would spend the next 11 months gathering all the servants and build a boat that can withstand wind and sharks and storms, and I would fill it up with as much food as you can and as much water as you can, and that way when the day comes that you're kicked off this island, you'll be ready for whatever comes next. This, says the Chofetz Chaim, is a mashal for life. Can you imagine if this guy would just lean back and say, oh, I'll just live like a king while I can? How foolish, how short-sighted, how shallow. Aren't we slightly the same way? This world lasts a millisecond. Olam haba is netzach nitzachim, where we'll dwell for the next billion years. We are on this earth for 5 minutes only as a layover to pick up mitzvahs. Why waste precious moments on comparatively petty pursuits? How foolish to push off spirituality because we are simply too busy chasing the mundane. All of us came into this world as a baby, weak and frail. We were then treated like kings in a world where delicacies grow on trees and the air is pure and plentiful and we have the entire natural world as our servants here to fulfill our wishes. Yet all of us will leave this world weak and frail. Some of us will leave with nothing to show for ourselves. But some of us will leave this world with millions of small, magical, spiritual moments. Moments that were too precious to pass by. Moments that no amount of busyness or stress or craziness was able to rob us of the spirituality buried under those moments. The Torah spends close to 5 entire parshias discussing the Mishkan. 449 psukim talk about it because it set the tone for all of Jewish history. When it comes to spirituality, don't waste even a moment.